Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
The specialists are back, and we are recapping Deal or No Deal Island, episode number 3. We see Boston Rob continue to be Boston Rob, and we see a case girl. I don't know what else you're supposed to call her, a model, but she's a case girl. Go up against the banker for the first time ever. And Will, they said in this episode that nobody knows what's in each case, not even the banker.
Yes. Yet. And okay, so that was what I wanted to bring. That is one of the main things I wanted to bring up. You picked up on that too, obviously. It wasn't made like a big deal, but it's the first time they're telling us, and this is episode 3. So it's almost like they've been listening to the specialists over here and was like, We need to answer some questions because the audience needs to know whether the banker knows, and banker meaning the show, production, whoever's coming up with the number, and then it's not based on what's inside the case. And you can also tell this line was ADR'd. What does ADR stand for? It's when they record lines after the fact.
Yeah, they do.
You can tell on Survivor too. You can hear them. And we don't see Joe's mouth moving. It's something they definitely recorded, like you know, probably a week or two ago and then put into the episode. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm not saying that this was because we mentioned it. I'm sure if there's any discourse about this show elsewhere, whether it be like online forums or if there are other podcasts or some news outlets, reporting outlets, stuff like that, I'm sure this has been kind of a question. Like, does production even know what's in the case? Can't they just rig the game to keep the person who they want in? And so now they are very clearly telling us that is not the case, that the offers given by the banker are just based on the cases remaining, and that's it.
Can I provide a qualm then, if qualm is the correct word in this situation?
Sure.
And I this is part of why I think they said it this episode. You have case girl go up there for the first time.
Let's call her by her name.
Claudia. Yeah, but I'm saying the case girl. I need to emphasize that she's the case girl. Go up there for the first time. Her numbers when she worked on Deal or No Deal were 1 in 9. And 1 had $500,000 in it and 9 had $1 million in it. The two highest numbers on the board.
Are we sure she only had 1 in 9?
That's what she said. She really emphasized that. I'm just saying. Just saying.
I mean, that could just happen. That could just be a question.
And then she even says, oh, I'm getting this offer. There's probably $500,000 in here. And it's almost like they, dude, I'm telling you, if it smelled like fish, it might be fish.
I know it was a good offer. And she, I think her downfall, and she alluded to this many times in her confessionals, was that she's playing too much for the group, which she did in the challenge. She was just like, screw it. I'll, you know, steal my case. I'll play the game and I'll take him out and everybody will be happier. And then she has an interview. I'm not sure when that interview took place, but at least to us, this was before she played Deal or No Deal. And she said, man, why did I do that? I just kind of jumped the gun a bit. I'm too aggressive. I just wanted Kim out. I'm playing for everybody else. I don't need to be doing this. And then when we see Deal or No Deal, she kind of thinks, I think the banker's messing with me. This is a fishy offer, as you just said. And I don't necessarily want to take it, even though everyone's saying, well, the math checks out, 66.6%. You're going to be safe here, Claudia. And she's like, this doesn't seem, I think I got 500,000, but she's like, you know what? It's a good offer for the group. And then she takes it. And that is, you know, that's her downfall. So it's not that she didn't sniff it out. I think she was just playing to appease so many people and not playing for herself. So I don't know. I don't think it's rigged. I don't think they can rig it. There's prize money. I mean, you're literally would be breaking the law. You could go to prison for this. Like, it's not like a little thing. Like, oh, they rigged it. Now, if they get the rules approved before that, they say they do know what's in everybody's case, or that they have, you know, the banker is making offers based on that knowledge, and everyone, the players know that, they're fully allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. But if they're telling the audience this, I imagine they told the players this too, like, no one knows what's in your case. And maybe they didn't tell the players. I don't know. Maybe they left the players in the dark. But you don't really want your players trying to game the show. Like, obviously, if they game the game, but don't game production. Like, whoa, what would the producers want me to do? Would they want me in the game? Do they want me out of the game? What would they offer? Because they know it's in my case. That's not what you want the players to play like, because you can't really talk about that in your interviews and confessionals about what your thought process is and how you're going to like make the best deal or not. So I don't think it's rigged, Phil. I don't. We can also talk about the challenge too, because there's some shady shit in there also.
Yeah, and look, I agree with you ultimately, because you and I both know that there is a lot of behind the scenes stuff, and like you just emphasized, you can go to prison for this stuff, so they're not trying to rig it. I just also noticed that it was 80-yard, and I noticed that it was thrown in for the first time in this episode with Claudia, aka Case Girl, standing up there doing it and picking. See, her you're all cases.
Into this case. They're all into this Case Girl, and
just saying they knew what her numbers were. She emphasized what her numbers were.
If you randomize them, that could easily happen. It's like there's 20 cases. So it's like, I get it's a low chance, but it's not like, you know, it's not that big of an anomaly, I don't think.
It's pretty small.
I do think though, the Wait, was it the two highest cases or was there one in between?
Two highest cases, 1,500,000. I even just went back and checked to make sure there was no 750. 500,000 was the second highest. So the two highest numbers were in her cases.
It's 1 divided by 20 times 1 divided by 19.
What does that equal?
Let me see. Ooh, not looking good for Deal or No Deal here. I think we are looking at, I have to multiply by 100 here, actually, I think.
Hold on. It's less than 0.2%.
I was going to say, is it 0.2? I have 0.002 coming up. I have to multiply by 100. So it is 0.26%. So it is less than half of a percent. It's about a quarter of a percent chance. And a quarter percent chance is 1 in 400 times, which is, I get it. Not looking good, but still possible. It's not like it's 1 in 1,000,000 times or like 1 in 500,000, 1 in 400. That can happen.
I'm here for conspiracy theories, baby. If you like the video, please, or if you like that concept, like this video, subscribe to the channel. But Will, that's just fishy to me. And like, I know, like, again, the reason I'm calling Claudia Case Girl is to emphasize this point of it's just when I was watching this and when that happened and I said, wait, the first number she did was 9 and that was $1 million. And the second number she said her first number was 1 and then she became 9 or something like it was 9 and then 1, whatever it was. Those were her numbers. And the fact that the first one she pulled was $1 million and then the one that she had in her hand was for 500,000, that's just crazy to me. I'm just saying. So we can move off of that, but I just think that's
Let's think about this. Let's say it was rigged. Are they rigging it for or against her? Because I think
they love Kim, man.
No, but I do think you could say, okay, she picks one of her cases. Now she's got the $1 million case, and that's not coming off the board ever. And now you have Case Girl going, oh my God, I could have the million and make no deal and end with the $1 million case and send Kim home. So yeah. Like you giving someone a high case, I know you'd rather have a lower case. Like if you get the 1 cent case, obviously any deal you make, you're going to win. It could be mm-hmm. $20. You're going to survive. But I do think the players have to know, okay, there's a real opportunity here. Just hold on to my case. Don't make a deal with the banker. The banker's trying to tempt you. That's the whole point of the game. Do you keep what you have? So you don't have to make a deal. And didn't we see that in episode 1 that Aaron just like held on to his case? Or was that – have we always seen a deal? Are we 3 for 3 on deals? Or I think in episode 1
– Aaron held on and took his case, which was $600,000. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's – I mean, you could say they rigged it against her, but you could also say, okay, they gave her like the one of the two highest case if she was going to go with her numbers. Which could help her. So I don't even know what the...
I think that's what's hard with this game, though, Will, and we've talked about this throughout. You know, this is the third episode we're dealing of Deal or No Deal Island. We've talked about it throughout, which the difficult part of this is you never really have much of an advantage whether you get high or low in terms of staying in the game. In terms of building up the prize pot, you want to have a higher number because then you have a better chance of building up the prize pot. But in terms of staying in the game, you could have the one penny case and you actually probably have a better chance of staying in the game.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Than if you have the $100,000 case, because everything is going to be higher than what your case is, so any deal you take is going to be good. So it's really hard to figure out where the advantage is in that situation. But you know, it's just I don't necessarily think it's I don't know if it's rigged for or against. I just think it's fishy that
it was weird. I think you're right. It's a little bit fishy, and you know that sometimes that stuff happens. Sometimes you randomize stuff and it's like, how the hell did that happen? And then it would be unfair not to go with whatever randomization happened. Like if they randomize the cases and they realize, holy shit, the two highest cases are her numbers, this is gonna look bad. It's then unfair to redo it so that it doesn't feel rigged. That is then rigging it. So it's a tough one.
It's a tough one. Whatever the case may be, how well
you rewatch season 1 of Lost? Season 1 of Lost, season 1 episode 9, I believe.
19.
Is it really? No, because that's where they get the guns, and that's like pretty early on. That becomes like a big thing. Maybe 11?
12. It's 12.
Okay, 12. Mm-hmm. All right.
That's when they go into the pool at the beginning and they pull that out from underneath the bodies at the bottom. Wow, look at us, man, remembering. Yeah. Anyway.
Do you remember? I remember.
There you go. Boom.
Yeah, Lost. That. There we go. If anyone wants to go to Hawaii with us on April 27th for the 20th year anniversary of Lost, come join us. Phil and I are going to be there.
Yeah, Will is telling me this now live on this podcast. He mentioned we're going to talk about it after, and now he's like ready to go. He's just already booked me tickets, I think.
I do have a ticket for you, Phil. We're going. So wow. There weren't many left, so I just had to buy them. So if you want tickets to that, I would get them ASAP. Okay, back to Deal or No Deal Island. I have to say, I really, really love this episode. I really thought it was good. I thought it was the best episode that the show's had. I think the challenge, really fun with the stunt, plus the game of it. Now there's a couple things to get into. I don't know if you noticed what I was noticing, but definitely a few things to look at. How the challenges actually have stakes is so great in the conversations. And, you know, Stephanie, I didn't know who Stephanie was. I didn't know she was on the show, but Stephanie had a big decision to make. We have Kim arguing, Claudia arguing, and Boston Rob with the highest case, trying to get his case not stolen. So I really, really enjoyed this challenge in this segment. And I think we got to know more of the cast, the alliances. Like, I thought this was a really, really strong episode. I'm here for Deal or No Deal Island. This was definitely the best episode of the three. Did you feel the same way?
I don't know if I thought it was the best one, but I felt like it was the most well-balanced one. I felt like we got a good amount of the challenge. We got a good amount of the cast. We got a good amount of portion set for the Deal or No Deal game. We got a good amount set for the strategy of Deal or No Deal Island, you know, the version of the game where people are actually backstabbing and doing all that. Yeah, I thought it was pretty well done. I mean, the challenge itself was probably the most fun challenge. I thought this is, again, we talked about this with the traders and we got roasted so many times during the traders podcast. Not that we give a shit, but we did. And one of the big things with the traders was, what are they going to do with their challenges, even when they make them look really cool? This was a great looking challenge and it served purpose for everybody participating in the challenge, whether it came down to the steal, came down to how much money you were going to hit, all of those things. I've really loved the challenges on Deal or No Deal Island. I think this was probably the best one they've done so far, kind of like creating that you got to just throw your bag and hope that it lands in the right spot and all of those things. I thought that was a fun twist on this. It was better because there was no time limit on the shooting of the arrows. Last time we saw Aaron take 4.5 days to get up the tree and he still was fine. So I did enjoy that. And I honestly kind of enjoy that Boston Rob is playing Survivor on Deal or No Deal Island. Like, he is pitting people against each other.
It's really fun. I think
it's really good.
And sometimes you're like, okay, we've seen too much of Boston Rob. I get it. It's really like, I'm actually loving this version of Boston Rob, which I didn't think I was going to like. I thought it was just going to be like, he's going to just be a caricature of himself and it's not Survivor. So like, what are we even doing? But I have fully enjoyed Deal or No Deal Island Boston Rob.
It reminds me very much of, what I really appreciated is it's like Redemption Island Boston Rob, except he is playing a new game. He's not just playing an old game with a bunch of people who don't know what they're doing, and he's done it 4 times. So he is having to figure out what's going to work for him and everything anyway. But I also am really loving how much he's leaning into, like, just who he is and winking at the camera and saying, I still got it, and this, that, whatever. He really made – what did you think? Because you were saying at the challenge you felt it was a little sketchy. What did you think was sketchy at the challenge?
So a few things, the main one being that, okay, the $2 million case, which is the one you want to go to, that was sitting up, that was the most elevated of the stones, this like stone map. And the most likely place for the stone to land is just a step down from the 2 million. And when Rob went first, and that had 1 million on it. And so Rob goes, he gets a million. And that's the easiest place to hit because that it's basically you can just roll it. It's going to roll into the edge of the $2 million one and then just sit on that tile or square. And the thing they were doing is this value kept changing for everybody, which was really odd. So basically Rob got to go first. They started it with a million and look, they are fully allowed to, I believe, they just say, hey, this is our order. Producers have decided the order. We want Boston Rob to go first. That seems fair, but to change the game board, that seems a little unfair. And maybe they did just randomize it. We're going to do a random draw, and Rob, you ended up going first. That's, again, totally possible. It's only like a 1 in whatever, 11 or 10, however many people are left. It's a not that crazy probability-wise, not a 1 in 400 like we just talked about. But he goes, and it's the million, he gets it, and then like people, there's a few people that hit that exact same spot who get like the 50. I think Kim might have hit the $50,000 in that same spot or someone
I'm trying to
like
watch it right now,
$75,000 in that same spot. Like that was the most common spot to hit, and it was never higher than a million, or it was never, there was never that good. And then I actually noticed one time, and this is the part that confuses me the most, is I think it was Nick. Who were the two dudes? Like, I don't even know that.
Dawson, I think.
Nick and Dawson. So it's them two. One of them went, and you could see
him way overshot, by the way. I just rewatched him. Way overshot.
Are you seeing the tile I'm talking about?
Wait, so, but Will, here's what's even more fascinating to me. There could have been multiple $1 million.
Well, that's what I'm so confused by.
They're showing no, because I'm watching Kim's right now. So I was agreeing with you. So I wanted to see how they actually did this. So I'm watching Kim's right now, and it's a shot where I can see her flying through the air and her bag rolling, and the $1 million is still in front of the 2 million. So there must have been the ability to get multiple $1 million.
Right. But that $1 million square in front, it was there for some people, not for others. And that's the easiest square. And so I was just saying, when Nick or Dawson, when one of them was going, I saw the $1 million tile there, and Rob had already had the $1 million case, which is weird, because in every one of these challenges we've seen that no one can have the same case value. That's not how it works, as you rank it.
Yeah, and then when Stephanie does hers, Tiger Lady, whatever her name is, she hits the number right in front of the 2 million, and it's 375K.
Yeah, so it's like changing the whole time. Plus, Rob already has it. And a lot of these shows, what they'll do is they will shoot each person go and then edit it in a different order. So perhaps Boston Rob wasn't the one to actually go first, and then they do that for suspense or for whatever reason to tell the best story. That's a very common way of doing this, like especially when people aren't playing a game all at once. Like if 10 people have to go do a thing, you try to shoot it, you shoot it, but you don't want to be married to the order in post. But then the weird thing here is that they have their stands with their cases, and we see Boston Rob with his case. And then whoever went second, was it Kim? Or Kim went second. We saw her with her case, and we are building up the cases. So then it's like, maybe they are airing in the true order. Or maybe what they did is they shot it all, everybody went, and then they got pickups of people getting in their order, which that seems like a headache. I don't know why they would do that. So I'm like really confused on why the million kept popping in and out once Boston Rob already had it, and the fairness on it like popping in and out of the easiest tile to hit in the game.
Yeah, and I like you bringing that up, and that's why it's nice to have your eye with the fact that you like do challenges and things like that, because you can see this stuff. Because I just went back and rewatched Stephanie's, and she's the one who hit the steal, which caused most of the drama. In front of her 2 million was $90,000. Was in front of her 2 million. So if she banks it off the $2 million, she's getting 90,000. Because realistically, nobody's going to hit the 2 million because you're throwing at such an angle. You got to get that thing to land perfectly for it to not roll off.
You literally have to like hold the top of the triangle and try to drop it. Obviously, you have to drop it a little earlier because of,
because of
inertia, Newton's second law, I believe. And then have it just like plop and land perfectly on it. It's going to be hard to hit, but it's just weird that the million kept coming in and out of that really, really easy spot. And then Rob going first could just hit it right away. But then one of the other dudes had it too. So it's like so confusing to me. I really don't know. I would love to, we get an interview with one of these players. I would love to talk about some of like the challenge kind of like, I don't know, the sequencing of it all. Because last week I was a little kind of, I was like, a little confused.
Who should we be reaching out to? I'll send messages. Who should we reach out to? Just everybody and anybody?
Boston Rob. I mean, we're our Survivor podcast.
He has an email for collaborations. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, and we could say, after the show's over, we want to talk about Deal or No Deal Island. We Survivor's been talked to death about. We want to hear about Deal or No Deal Island.
Yeah. Will, contact Boston Rob. Send out a nice email. You got this. Be a good guy.
That's you. You get all the guests.
I get all of them, but I'm scared to email Boston Rob. You have more confidence. You need a guy with a lot more confidence to email somebody like Boston Rob.
Are you intimidated by Boston Rob? Does he scare you?
He does. He does. And he should scare everybody on the island, because now all of a sudden he's buddying up with everybody, but he's inflicting the buddy system into everything he's doing right now. He really is.
I loved how him and Aaron had this like dual confessional. Mm-hmm. They're like sitting
they're
together.
The Boston brains, but they're the only brains out there. He's turning mm-hmm. Aaron into a villain right before our eyes. Aaron's going to be a serial killer, and it's going to be yeah. because of Boston Rob.
Aaron thought that Boston Rob was on the Heroes tribe.
That was so funny.
Like,
I love that.
I figured Aaron would be like a big Survivor fan like us, like a Survivor nerd. Like, and you have to know that Boston Rob's on the villains tribe. I mean, come on.
Yeah. No, I absolutely, absolutely love that. I couldn't believe that he says, so you run Heroes versus Villains and you were a hero, right? And he's like, no, I was a villain. And then like Aaron kind of thought that was funny, which I was also into. So what did we think? There you go. Phil is like Ben in Winners at War. Exactly. I'm going to go down a yeah. hero.
Yeah. You're scared. You're just like, oh my God, I'm scared of Rob. Will, you email him.
You email him, Will. Yeah,
I will. I'm not scared.
There you go. We'll see what happens. If Boston Rob ends up on this podcast, just know it's because Will has charisma and charm that he just doesn't expose on this podcast. That's really what
I think
it
that doesn't really come across in an email.
That's why you killed it. That's why your email was so good. You yeah. didn't need to have charisma or charm. You killed it. Let me ask about the end of this episode real quick. Do you think it matters whether or not there's a success, there's a bad deal or a good deal at the end of this episode for it to be a good episode? Because you said this was your favorite episode. Did the end of it impact you at all, or did you not really care?
No, I thought it was just, I thought the deal could go either way. I liked how she was even thinking, I think this is like, this is a fishy offer. And then she, you know, the group wants her to take it. The numbers are in her favor. She could have gone either way. She could have said, look, there's a $500,000 case up here. She's like, this could be the $500,000 case. It was a choice that she made. Mm-hmm. I like the game of deal or no deal worked out, I think, pretty well here. And she just made the bad call. And we've said it before. You can't really be that good at deal or no deal. It is a luck thing. And I think that's okay. I'm okay with that part of it. I mean, you can maybe read into things here or there. You got to get lucky with the cases that you're opening up. It's kind of a push your luck. How risky do you want to be? Mm-hmm. So I'm very okay with the game. And I think where the game actually lies is just do everything you can to make sure you don't end up playing. And then do everything you can to make sure that the person who does end up playing, if they win, that they don't pick you to go home. And that game in itself is very fun and very yeah. interesting. And I like the whole mechanics of that. I think we had said, maybe this was on the premiere, we had said, if, you know, instead of playing deal or no deal, they just flip a coin. If it's heads, they win. If it's tails, they lose. And if it's heads, they win, they get to pick someone to eliminate. Would that still be an interesting show? And I think the answer would be yes. Obviously, the segment of flipping a coin once, not as intriguing as opening briefcases, but you get the point.
I feel like I probably watched that part of the episode the least, as funny as that is. I feel like, you know, when deal or no deal is actually taking place, I'm just waiting for them to get down to the number of like to three or four cases left. Cause I feel like when they're flipping all of them, I'm not really thinking about what's the deal going to be, what's she going to get? Because at the end of the day, it comes down to what's in her case. That's all I care about. When she flipped over the million first, Claudia had no chance of winning. Because the only way she was going to win was by not accepting a single deal.
Which is fine.
Every deal she was offered was better than a 50-50 deal. Everyone.
Right. And she, but she said no to the first, what? She only said no once, I think, right?
She said no. No, it was just once. It was just once. So both deals she was offered, though, were better than 50-50 chances. If she's like, she should say yes to those deals, essentially, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. But again, it's not called Deal Island. It's Deal or No Deal Island. No deal is just as much of an option. You could just take your case and hope for the best. And yeah, I mean, if you keep your case and the deal that was offered you is below the value of your case, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. It's fine.
Yeah. No, I don't mind it. I just wanted to see what you thought. Cause this is the first time we actually saw somebody wrong
lose deal or no deal. I like that.
Last week and won. Aaron took the case and won, and now we saw a deal lose, which I, you know, it was a new dynamic. Three
and I like that. I like that we've had three different outcomes of deal or no deal. I think there's only four outcomes you could get.
Mm-hmm.
You have your win with the your case, win with the deal, lose with your case, lose with the deal. Mm-hmm. So we've hit three of the four outcomes. Yeah, I liked it.
Now, what did you think about at the challenge when Stephanie was thinking about going and taking Boston Rob's case and everybody jumped in to say, no, don't do that. Claudia ended up screwing herself here. But what did you think about Stephanie standing over there and doing this? Because Stephanie didn't really want to be in this alliance that's going so hard against Kim. How did you think that this was handled, and how could it have been handled better?
I get what Stephanie was saying. I get how she's like, the whole island of people here wants to dogpile, to use Jake's term. We're dogpiling on Kim. No one wants her around. She's the easy boot, all that. And you know what? I don't mind Kim. I like Kim, and I don't need to play someone else's game. But by going against the entire group, you just put a unnecessary target on yourself. And you could say all day, I want to play my own game, make my own decisions. I think choosing to go with the group sometimes, that is a good decision, and that can be a part of your game. Like, my game is to blend in. Who was it that went up on the – they were getting – Joe is like, you know – about to raise her up, and she's like, I'm gonna be, or I guess he said Cobra, but she's like, I'm just gonna be gray, I'm gonna stay in the middle, keep everyone happy. And then he's like, yeah, and you're gonna strike like a cobra at the end. She said, that's right. I think that's Jordan.
That was her name. Was it Jordan?
I think it was Jordan, who I don't even know who Jordan is. And at Stephanie, I did not know she was on the show until this episode, which is fine. But yeah, I think Stephanie here, it's just, you don't need to draw unnecessary attention to yourself. It's pretty obvious this was a really bad move. And then I think even a worse move by Claudia.
Yeah.
I think even a worse move by Claudia to then say, like, she was so in the moment heated at Kim because Kim called her an effer. I mean, a lot of bleeping out tonight, but I think
there's a lot of effers being thrown.
I think you could tell it was effers, I think, because they were saying absolutely bitches. Was. Yeah, they're saying bitches all the time, which you're allowed to say, but you can't say effer. So she was saying efforts, and that got under Claudia's skin, and she just made the mistake of saying, you know what, I'm just going to go play Deal or No Deal and eliminate Kim, and guess what? You didn't win, so you're gone. So I think Stephanie actually got kind of saved that Claudia even made a worse move than she did. And again, I get what Stephanie's saying, but you gotta blend in a little bit.
Do what Jordan's doing. Feel like with Stephanie, like, Stephanie would have made that decision. She would have been safe this week because Rob did have the highest case, so she would have been immune, and there would have been no way for her to go home. But next week, she's public enemy number one. I think she's still going to end up being public enemy number one because she didn't do anything in her power or everything in her power to be cohesive with the group. I get that there's factions that are forming, but if Kim's going to be an easy target in a game that is as simple as I won, so I pick you, you want there to be an easy target. You don't want to make yourself that easy target because now Rob can say, okay, I pick you. That's not good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if Kim goes, if Kim had gone home here, it's like Stephanie then becomes, yeah, the next person to dogpile on, for sure.
Yeah.
And that's not where you want to be.
At all. At all. We're almost at 30 minutes. What else do we need to talk about from this episode? I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I think we kind of broke down the challenge. And again, I think when there's...
What did you think about the tree falling in the challenge behind them right after? Like, that could have been their tree.
What was that?
What the hell was that?
What was that? But was
I
that
don't
like,
want to go up on that anymore. No way.
Was that like a planned part of the show to like scare them?
I think it was just one of those trees like that just like was old and it fell over.
Just fell over. Was someone doing were they cutting down and clearing trees? Because a lot of times, especially in those areas, it seems like they're next to some sort of like resort. They do a lot of like surveys on the trees to see which ones are good. And if they see a tree dying, they will then cut it down before it falls down uncontrolled. So I don't know what that was. Or was it an animal? Like, was it a bunch of monkeys going through the jungle, like Planet of the Apes, and leaves are just bustling out everywhere? That'd be cool.
I don't know. All I know is the entire tree fell down, and that scared the shit out of me. Because as somebody who doesn't like heights, who probably would have struggled with this challenge, seeing a tree fall right after I just did that, I'd probably be having nightmares for days after that.
Would you have done the challenge?
Yeah, I would have done the challenge. I mean, I always think like when I'm in normal circumstances, I don't like heights. But if you get onto one of these shows and stuff, they're doing everything in their power to make sure you don't die, because then they're going to get sued so bad that I feel much more confident being in one of these shows. Same thing as like, I don't want to go in a helicopter, but if I got to go in a helicopter on the Traders, I'm going to be fine.
Yeah, we got to get you on the Traders, huh?
Yeah, just so I can go in a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
If they do a podcast version of the Traders, you know, a reality TV podcast version of the Traders, that'd be fun.
It could be fun.
I would lose. Yeah.
We'll add that to the list.
Yeah, add that to the list. Marv over here says Rob is definitely saving the show and making it fun to watch. So let's ask the question I asked after episode number two. Deal or No Deal Island gets renewed for season two. Can this show exist with just 13 normal people, or does it need a star stunt cast like this?
It depends. I do think they should either go like more, lean more into like former reality stars, because like Boston Rob is doing such a good job at carrying this, mm-hmm. or just cast people that are, you know, I mean, like Russell on his first season in Samoa, he wasn't a star or stunt casting. That was just Russell Hans. Like, if you can find someone like that, or just find these really like Parv in Cook Islands, I know that's not where she really took off, but she was clearly a successful casting choice. So I think you just have to get really good people, regardless of if they played on a reality show before. And I think it can work. I think it can work with like 13 unknown people. They just have to be good. Like, you just need good people. And that goes for a lot of shows. It goes for Survivor. Like, the cast is going to dictate how enjoyable it is to watch. I think it probably, if they were going to do a season two of this show, which I don't know if they are.
I don't know what the ratings are like.
I'm hearing it's not good. I'm hearing it's doing pretty poorly. Maybe do some research on this.
Yeah, go ahead. You keep talking. I'll try to Google it.
No, I didn't hear. I've not heard or seen good things when I was, you know, looking into that. But Boston Rob is huge. I think it definitely helps. It doesn't hurt the show to have somebody that big. I mean, one could argue it kind of hurts because we focus so much on him. We don't know everybody else, but he's this good that it does make the show so fun to watch. So yeah, I think maybe you would want one or two top level people, or just do what the Traders did. Just be like, screw it. We're getting 13 people who have been on Big Brother. Amazing
Actually,
Race.
That's the only way they can make this work.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going to get a season two unless they do all pseudo celebrities.
Especially now that this is an NBC show. You have multiple NBC competition formats that are really taking off right now. I mean, the Traders is huge. You have, that's a 20 person cast. You can be like, why couldn't you pull CT and put him out here, or pull Johnny Bananas, who was on the Traders and was on House of Villains, another NBC family show. So they have enough shows. And what they're doing, NBC anyway, with the Traders and House of Villains, are pulling people from every network. So they can do that too. They don't even have to keep it in their own family. But like, why not see a housewife out here? You know, get Phaedra. Phaedra was fantastic on the Traders. Mm-hmm. So, and they have so many housewives to choose from. So,
I'm having a hard time finding exactly how it's doing. But the thing is, the rate, no, it's bad. Well, no. Its first episode was off to a pretty healthy start, this says, and it retained nearly 70% of the voice lead-in. This was the first episode. So, I mean, it's not doing terrible. I just think, I mean, the premiere had 3.1 million viewers.
Right, but that's NBC primetime slot.
No, that was at 9:30 at night on NBC.
Right.
So that was a little bit later.
It's still primetime, though.
Yeah, I guess that was the voice was the, yeah, the voice was 6.3.
The hours of 8, 9, and 10 are all prime time slots. And once you get to 11 p.m., it's the late night slots.
I did better than TMZ investigates.
Okay. Maybe it's got legs, but that's the premiere. Was there a big drop off to the second episode?
I got to see if I can find episode number two. What was episode two? That was last week. Last week it had, where is this? 2.52. So not a massive drop off. And it was a 0.25 in the 18 to 49 rating. It was a 0.25 in the week before. So that's not terrible.
They just probably want more. Hey, and people might be watching it on Peacock also. And we have Kendra here saying Bananas would be fun for this show.
And it actually went up this week, 2.87 and 0.3. So it's actually improving.
Wow. Yeah. So maybe I'm completely wrong.
They're doing it again.
Yeah, and this episode, I thought, at least for me, I thought it was really strong. So if I'm someone who like is on the fence about this show and I'm on episode three, I'm like, you know what? It was pretty good. I'm going to watch next week.
Yeah, I mean, it was going up against a rerun of NCIS Hawaii, but still. I mean, yeah, I think it's doing all right. Maybe it's doing all right. I don't know. I'm enjoying it. I did.
And live viewership, I think, is just, we don't need to really put that much weight into it. And they don't really release streaming.
I watched it on Peacock today. I didn't watch it on NBC. So like,
yeah, I watched.
I didn't count on podcasting. You're podcasting, like, and we didn't.
Yeah,
we didn't.
On Peacock, they get that data, and I think that's where they're maybe not as psyched. But
probably nowhere near what the Traders is, and that's probably got them bummed. Not that they thought it was going to be that big, but they probably hoped.
they probably hoped that they could have the like you said, not fully the traders level, but if they could start lower than that and then work up to it. You know, the traders, I don't think, opened to rave success. It took, you know, probably a couple episodes to, you know, get people talking about it and spreading the word. So yeah. I don't know if the word is spreading as quickly on Deal or No Deal Island. I'm liking it though. And honestly, there's part of it where I think people look at it and they're like, that show's below me. Like this, that sounds stupid. Like I've talked to some people and they're like, that sounds like a show in 30 Rock where they would just like make up ideas like MILF Island or something.
Which MILF Manor is now a thing.
Yeah. MILF Manor is an actual show. And they're like, yeah, Deal or No Deal Island. And it's like a parody almost. So I think there is a little bit of that stigma, but if you get beyond that, I think the show is working. If people can like give it a try, I don't think it's like too cheese ball.
No. And like I said, I've enjoyed it. I really have. Like I've enjoyed what we have seen thus far. I'm into it.
Also, a question we got on our, I think it was on Deal or No Deal Island recap. I think our episode 2 recap. It was a comment because we're kind of running out of things to talk about here. Again, we like the episode so we can just praise it all day long. But that just doesn't take as much of our effort and time as, you know, an hour long podcast probably means we have a lot to, or if there was some big strategic decision or controversy
that
we
could break down on the show.
There really wasn't. I mean, an interesting part of this show is that one of the big decisions is whoever gets the highest case chooses between two people to play Deal or No Deal Island. And that probably the producers, like, that's a big moment. That's a big decision in and of itself. We've yet to see that be a suspenseful choice. Every single time we go to whatever they call it, the temple, the banker's temple, we know who's going to play Deal or No Deal. And it's kind of like fire making at Final Four with Survivor. It's like you kind of know who's going. They talk about it at camp, they practice. You know, sometimes it's held in suspense a little bit. Am I gonna put myself in, or am I gonna pick, you know, who am I gonna take? But you kind of know, and that's what it's been here. And I wonder if at some point this season we will have a really tough choice, because we've yet to see that. Anyway, back to this comment we had. It was like, I can't believe you guys are podcasting Deal or No Deal Island, and you're also doing the traders, but you won't do Big Brother. Mm-hmm. And it's like Big Brother is like such a big reality show, and we just don't podcast it. And so for people wondering why, my reasoning is, I mean, our name of this channel is The Specialist. And it's kind of a, you know, kind of a corny name, and it's, we don't take ourselves super seriously.
Fuck, but dude.
Yeah. Sorry, Phil. No, it is a little bit, we have fun with it. It's not, we're like, we are the number one experts and anything we say is correct. But I can't go back and rewatch every season of Big Brother. Like there's just too much of Big Brother to watch. And as someone who would podcast, like I like to go in depth with things, and I don't feel like I could confidently podcast a show that I haven't seen every episode of, especially plus the live feeds. I mean, we would be so far behind. But they do 3 episodes a week, so there's like how many, like 30 episodes in a season, and it's like there's 30 seasons or whatever, 25 seasons. So
that's, and all that being said, like I'm going to do The Amazing Race, but The Amazing Race has no strategy involved. Like McKenna and I are going to be podcasting, and Celestine, we're going to be podcasting Thursday night late. But it's like there's really not much strategy. You can pick up on what's going on with The Amazing Race. With Big Brother, it is like Survivor. If somebody started doing a Survivor podcast tomorrow and they just started watching now, and they even tried to binge all the seasons, I'd be like, those people don't know what the hell they're talking about. And I don't want to be that. But that's why we have Blake. Blake might be doing Big Brother. He might. I'm not saying he is, but he might, because Blake loves Big Brother. And so far, people have actually liked listening to Blake talk, which is good to know, because he needs that kind of validation.
Yeah.
And it's easy. I mean, people are giving us a hard time that we won't go watch the international versions of The Traitors. And it's like, but I'm only talking about US. Like US is its own show. It's its own entity. It's its own program. I don't need to watch the other versions to know what US has told me. And if US feels that I need to watch the other versions to understand, it's kind of a problem, a flaw in their logic, because most people aren't seeking those out. So I just think like The Traitors was easy. This is the first season of Deal or No Deal Island. It was the first season of The Trust. We could try to get in on the ground floor. One of these shows is going to hit, and we'll have said, we started podcasting it in the first season.
Yeah. We'll have seen every... Yeah, we'll see. We'll have seen every episode and can like speak to everything that's happened on the show. Where it's like Big Brother, I would not feel like I could even like we would not be able to reference anything. Oh, this reminds me of that when that happened, or like, how does this work? Like, there'll be questions like, what's going on?
And we wouldn't understand the gravity of those things even if we went back and watched it now, because I don't know what actually is deemed important. It'd be the same thing as like Colby beating Tina probably has very little meaning to people nowadays because they're just speeding through them. But at the time it was like, holy shit, the old woman just beat the guy who won all the challenges.
Tina beating Colby. Yeah.
That's what I meant. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I was looking at a picture of Colby as I said that, so that made it hard.
Weird.
Yeah. Well, it came up in the side here for watch next, so it just came over. But, well, you got anything else, or should we wrap this up?
I think that's all good.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Like the video if you can. Subscribe to the channel if you're listening over on iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, any of that stuff. Head on over to YouTube every now and then. Give us a like. That always helps, and it really helps build up the channel and all that fun stuff. Will and I will be back tomorrow night at some point. Will, do you know what time with Survivor? Episode's an hour and a half this time. It's only on until 9:30.
It will be late tomorrow night. It won't be early. It won't be insanely late, but
it won't be like the premiere where I was podcasting with Blake at 1:15 in the morning.
No, I don't think it will be that bad. Okay.
It'll be late next week, and then we'll get into the rhythm of right after each episode, because then it gets easier for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is where we're going to get the most views, Will. That's why we got to do it. It's not for everybody else. It's for us.
We're going to have to figure out our podcasting schedule for when we're in Hawaii. Got to figure that out.
1:30 p.m. But anyway, thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.